Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello again, Dad.
Well, hello again there, Tay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Get ready for October. We've still got a couple days. Although I think by the time people will listen to this, it will be, right? Possibly.
Yeah.
It's basically spooky time.
As long as you've got to wait till October 1st, is that what you're saying?
Well, I just am ready. I'm ready for it to be fall. I want to, like, just smash a pumpkin in my face. I want to make out with a ghost. I just want it to be spooky time.
Well, I know that, and I know you all discussed it on Still Buff, is that Sydney has her decorations already started with her large Jack and Sally from The Nightmare Before Christmas up there.
Now, Dad, I have to ask, you knew Christmas like 1,000%.
Mm-hmm.
Why not Halloween?
Well, I figure you can't do both. I don't have enough room in my basement to store everything for both, so I have to pick one, and Christmas just came first.
But, Dad, there is a 50-foot skeleton. Maybe it's not 50. It's not 50. It's like 12. There's like a giant skeleton at Home Depot that people have been putting in their front yards. Like, you don't know how good of a game you're missing out on.
Well, it kind of goes to waste because... We don't ever get any trick-or-treaters because you got a half a mile hill to come up and there's five houses up here. So nobody makes that walk.
Yeah, but if you made your front yard like an amazing Halloween paradise, maybe they would make the walk.
Well, they might, or they might drive up there just to looky-loo, but we're never there because we're out with the girls trick-or-treating, so we're never there anyway.
Just saying. It ultimately comes from the place where I live in New York, and thus I cannot buy the giant skeleton because I don't have a yard, but I want someone to have it.
Couldn't you just hang it out your window?
I mean, it's massive. Like, if you've seen pictures of people that have it, like, it stands over top of their house. It's big.
Mm.
But we've got a whole month for spooky content, so we'll come up with some good episodes along those lines. Today is not that. Today is all about our question and answers from our lovely patrons in our Patreon.
That's right. Tell them what they're going to win.
Knowledge and some opinions. You know, questions are all over the place, but we asked our patrons any questions that they've been thinking about lately, and they sent us a whole bunch of excellent questions. So I think this is going to be a fun episode. So I don't know. Without further ado, I think we should just get right into it.
Well, all right. Then we'll start with the first question that comes from Ashley. And Ashley asks, what's with jungle juice? I see it on social media, and I'm not sure what makes it jungle juice or how long it existed. Can you please enlighten me? Because it just seems like a bad time.
Well, thank you, Ashley. And I do believe your assessment is correct. Jungle juice, it goes by many names. So if that name's not familiar, you might know it by Trash Can Punch or Purple Jesus. It's the thing that, like, in college, somebody buys like a plastic trash can and just fills up with like grain alcohol and every kind of Kool-Aid or juice they can find, you know, might be in a tub or in a sink. Like, it's always just like the nastiest, sweetest, just highly alcoholic thing. And I assumed that it was something that was just devised on like college campuses, right? That sounds like something that would be created there.
Mm-hmm. I was say, I saw one kind of like that on a college campus, but I don't remember it being called that. But at our fraternity house, one of the guys there, I don't know why, but you know those plastic type fountains like they have at drugstores where it's got like the punch stuff circulating, and it like goes up a tube in the middle and hits the roof and goes back down. They're like clear so you can see it circulating.
Oh, yeah, that's fancy.
Well, he had one of these things. So I came up with a bottle of this knee-high syrup that you mixed like one part syrup to four parts water. And so they got the idea to mix up that. I just got it to drink the grape drink. But they decided to put that in that cooler and add grain alcohol to it. And so when we had the next jiff at the fraternity house, the girls that didn't like beer, we told them they could have this grape punch. Well, they didn't know they were drinking grain alcohol, though. So there was a lot of them didn't make it home that night.
Oh, my. Well, that would be an example of a purple Jesus or a jungle juice. But here's the interesting thing is that this has actually been around for quite a while. And the name actually has an explanation to it. It dates back to the 1940s, and it was a term first coined by U.S. soldiers stationed in jungles around the South Pacific. So the Army... Wow. Yeah, the Army didn't send you alcohol rations by then. Like, troops couldn't import liquor, but they didn't particularly care if you drank on, like, while you were employed. So for these, you know, soldiers kind of out in unfamiliar territory, they just took to distilling very rough stuff with basically any fermentable sugar they could find. So they were just, you know, distilling these rough, high-octane distillates and mixing it with whatever was in their rations. You know, a lot of them would be issued lemonade, and then throw in what other fruit juices or just fruit that they could get their hands on, and they would mix something that they would call jungle juice because they were drinking it in the jungle. Hmm. And that's that idea made it back to the mainland, of course, and then, you know, found its homeland on college campuses. But it's been around a lot longer than you might think.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, the only other thing that I've heard comparable to that is we did used to have a group when we were a much younger couple, your mother and I, that we lived in these apartments, and we would have a happy hour where we would get together and somebody would have a new trash can and everybody would bring a couple bottles of cheap wine, and we'd all pour in the wine and add ice and fruit and usually a bottle of grain alcohol just for flavor, you know, and then everybody would drink that.
I mean, same concept, you know? Just something boozy, something sweet to hide it. That's it.
Yeah, main point is bring a clean garbage can, not a used one.
Yeah, that's even when you do it in a clean one, there's something visually that I'm just like, no, absolutely not. I've been to parties that not any time recently, but back in the day where it was just a garbage can. I'm like, I don't care how new that is. It's a garbage can.
I don't know where that garbage can's been.
No, you say it's new. I don't know. I need to see the sales receipt. But there you go, Ashley. So I hope that answers your question. Ultimately, probably something to stay away from, as you don't know exactly what's in it. There's no set recipe. It varies region by region. You know, you'll get different names and different this is what goes in it, depending on where you are in America and really the world at large that has this same concept. But I think the one thing they all have in common is it's going to be kind of rough and kind of high in sugar and probably lead to a headache.
Yeah, and there is nothing right or nothing wrong to put in there. Everything's acceptable.
Exactly. So you just don't know what you're getting other than probably grain alcohol.
All right. Well, moving on to the next question. It comes from Nathan. And Nathan says, you've talked a lot about the basic cocktail recipes, 2 3/4, 3/4 for a sour, 1 of sour, 2 of sweet for a punch. Is there a place where all those basic recipes can be found, like a cocktail book or useful internet resource? I'd love to have those at my fingertips when I feel like making a new drink.
Well, you know, along with this question, there was another one that was written in by Andrew that was similarly asking if there are any books that we'd recommend about cocktails, recipe books, history, or how to create new cocktails. So I thought that we could kind of answer both Nathan and Andrew's question here.
Well, all right. Let's give them a twofer.
Here you go. So there are a lot of amazing cocktail books out there and a lot of like cute books that will just take your money and not give you much content. I think by and large, when buying cocktail books, this is going to sound kind of simple, but it is very true. You want books written by bartenders. There are so many books that are published by like prominent cocktail bars that I find to be like consistent, excellent sources for information, for technique, for structure behind a bar, and cocktail recipes. You know, a big name cocktail bar is not going to put its name on anything that's not thorough. So just, you know, there are a whole bunch of books by like Dead Rabbit, Death & Co. PDT has a great book. The Apiary has an amazing book. So when you're looking for cocktail books, a good judge is that if it's got the name of a big deal cocktail bar on it, it's probably going to be pretty good. But as far as personal favorites, for history, the first book I was ever told to read when I was just a wee little bar back and my bar manager told me to read a book was Imbibe by David Wondrich. He's probably the most important modern cocktail historian. It's a fantastic book that gives you recipes, but in the context of the history of bartending. So you really start with the origin of the cocktail. It moves forward through time. The writing is just really good. It's a great story along with some really great structure of classic cocktails. If you're looking for something a little bit more straight to the point and more to your question, Nathan, something that's organized by cocktail structures, I really love Regarding Cocktails by Sasha Petrosky. He's one of the most, also one of the most incredibly important figures in modern bartending, one of the founders of Milk and Honey. And that book is organized by like sour, old fashioned, martinis and Manhattans. So in each section, you can see the classic versions of these. You can see well-known variations on them, and you start to understand how those formulas run through them, but also the very important lesson of how to manipulate those formulas and make new things. So it's a very tidy little book. It's got about 75 recipes in it, but I'd say a lot of them are like the recipes you want to know. And it also has a lot of really good essays in it as well. There's an amazing section on having a cocktail party at home and like your home bar. And sometimes these cocktail books can feel a little like exclusionary. They seem like they're written for bartenders by bartenders. And I really like that Sasha includes this part that is specifically about, you know, the home bartender, what you should have at your house and how you can, what you can think of to prepare to make drinks at your house. So that's a fantastic book. It's also a beautiful book. The visual, like the layout of how they're illustrations of cocktails, and it has this little like guide to the proportions of each drink. So it's a very visual, if you think visually and you can't remember numbers, there's also that component to it. And then just sort of to round out a trio of like intro to bartending books, I really like The Bar Book by Jeffrey Morgenthaler. It has some recipes in it, but it is 100% technique. It is talking about how to shake, how to deal with egg whites, how to deal with syrups, how to measure. It is really just like how everything you need to know before you start mixing a drink. And it is beautifully organized. The cocktails it does include are always used as an example to demonstrate a technique. So it's a great sort of learning guide. There are a million books beyond that I could recommend, but as like a trinity to like understand history, recipes, and technique, these three, I think, are very strong contenders.
Well, in addition to that, I would add, I like to use my drink coasters that I have that have the picture of the drink on one side and the recipe for the drink on the back. And they're done by this little known artist named Taylor Schmerl.
The recipe is actually on the front with the illustration. It's not on the back.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry about that.
No, thank you. If you want just a quick guide to classic cocktails, well, if you're one of our patrons, you already know this, but if you're not, they are available as rewards. And sometimes they pop up in my store when I have extras, but the patrons get them first.
Well, all right. Just thought I'd put a little plug in there for you. I really do refer to those sometimes when I'm to refresh myself in case I forget the exact measurements, and I pull those out. I just deal them out like playing cards till I find the right one.
You know, you can just pull out a random one, and if you got a well-stocked bar, there's simple enough drinks that you can probably make it. So that's a fun little game.
Yeah, there you go.
Play like a cocktail roulette game with your friends.
Pick a card, any card.
Yeah. Or have somebody quiz you on your drinks if you're learning how to bartend.
All right. Well, I guess that we should finish. As you say, Andrew asked that was very similar to Nathan's, but then also there was a second part of it that said, what are some of your go-to drinks for fall? Aside from pumpkin beers, hot ciders, and the classic Marzen, I can't think of many.
This is fall is my favorite time for cocktails. There's so many ingredients and flavors and spirits that I love to mix with, which is, it's funny because in like the realm of classics, I think a lot of them work for fall, but maybe none of them are like that fall forward, that pumpkin spice latte equivalent that you want, you know? But for some of the things that pop into my mind around fall, first of course is anything related to apple. You mentioned cider, but I really love Applejack and Calvados. That's, you know, just an apple-based distilled spirit. They, like, classic use of Applejack is, like, the Jack Rose. Calvados is great in coffee. It's Calva Coffee is what it's called. It's sort of like a grown-up Starbucks drink, you know? You've got your alcohol liquor in your black coffee. It's delicious. Pomo is a... bottled, I guess it's sort of liqueur. It's more like a bottled cocktail, actually. So it's Calvados, but then it's proofed down with apple or pear must, so like fresh pressed juice. So it's really sort of ready to go, just pour over ice. So if you want something in like the apple category, there are a bunch of options there. Other things that I think of with fall are scotch. I think like a Rob Roy, like a Scotch Manhattan is great for fall. I think penicillin, if you want to shake and drink, that's got ginger and honey and scotch. It is great. It's beautiful, like, you know, a golden orange color when you mix it up right. And then
that'd be a fun one to serve at a Halloween party. Hey, who wants a shot of penicillin? You know, I think a good name for that.
I think it's named because it's like good for like the turning of the weather. Like if you got a cold coming on, it's going to fix you up. But maybe takes on a bit of a sinister tinge while we're in a pandemic.
Well, that's true.
I love sherry for the fall, too. A sherry cobbler is great. Think of it as sort of a fall sangria, maybe. But sherry, you know, it's nutty, it's oxidized, it's wine-based, but it's a little bit more fortified, a little heavier. I love like Amontillado and like Palo Cortado based cocktails in the fall.
How about a warm brandy with a slice of fruit in it or something?
A warm brandy? You like warm brandy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to heat it up on a brandy cooker. I don't know what do you call it. It held the glass there. It had a rim to hold the glass and had a big candle under it. You lit the candle and let it, the heat from the candle heated it up.
Well, and like a hot toddy, too, you know, as it gets colder out. Hot toddies are great. Also very malleable. You can kind of put any, you know, any syrup you want in a toddy. Most base spirits, rum works great in a toddy. Whiskey, tequila. And I've seen lots of different toddies. So that's a good formula for colder nights. And maple syrup. Maple syrup instead of your regular simple syrup. Easy way to make a cocktail taste like fall.
Maple syrup makes everything better. All right, this next question, Desmond, I'm not going to use your adjective. We think you're smart, Desmond. Let's say it's smart Desmond wrote in and said, what can I mix my Elise with that isn't just Sprite?
All right, so Elise is a mix of, it's like a bottled cocktail. It's a mix of vodka, cognac, and fruit flavors, according to the label. So ginger, cherry, passion fruit. I have had it before. There are a couple different varieties. The one that most people know is blue. It's blue. but it's very sweet. So how you could mix this in a way if you want to sort of elevate it, I think is a very simple answer would be probably with some bubbles, like instead of your Sprite, because it's got enough sweet already, and then your Sprite is adding sweet. I think if you made it as like, you know, like a 2 ounce pour top of some Prosecco, that would probably elevate it a little bit. You could also go the route of trying to add some acid to balance out the sweet. You could put a little lemon or lime in there and then maybe top it with some soda. If you wanted it to be a little bit higher proof, add some base spirit to it if you want. You know, you could add more of either the vodka or cognac, or you could add something that sort of modifies that. You could add some gin. You could add some tequila, you know, depending on how you want to move. But you got to treat it like a modifier in a Tom Collins. So I think any spirit can be worked with. And, you know, you've got booze and you've got sweet. You just want to balance it out.
Heck, you might even be able to mix it with one of these seltzers that you say only has the flavor of like you waved a lemon by it or something, you know? So maybe you put that in, you might come up with something interesting.
I think that's actually a really good idea. If you want like a complete no-nonsense, like simple thing to do with it, probably cutting it with some White Claw or like a good boozy seltzer is a great idea.
Well, there you go. I just stumbled into that.
There you go. It's a cocktail designed for you by Dad.
Drink it at your own risk. Yeah. All right, let's see. The next one is a three-parter written in by Sierra. Any other stories of buying alcohol that you assumed was one thing but turned out to be another? Any fun discoveries? I'm currently figuring out what to do with gin liqueur after mistaking it for regular old gin.
You know, I'm not sure if I've ever personally made that mistake. But I will say for a long time I made menus at a restaurant where even though I was expected to price out all the cocktails, do all the research, design the menus, I was not allowed to order my own liquor because I don't know, only man can have money and do ordering. But the man that did the ordering, one of the owners, wasn't very good at understanding how alcohol works. So he would see something, that he thought was like, it was a little cheaper and it would work the same, and he'd order it and be like, this is not the same product, but now I have a case of it and I have to work with it. So I was constantly having to readjust my menu to like case in point, we had a drink that had it was a tequila drink and it had like a jalapeno infused Cointreau in it. And he thought he was going to be clever by getting spicy tequila, and then we don't have to get Cointreau anymore because we got the spices in the tequila now. And I'm like, well, okay, but Cointreau is also a modifier that provides flavor and sweetness. And this spicy tequila you got is significantly low grade. It's not 100% agave, and it doesn't have any of the flavors of the tequila that I chose for this drink. So, okay. So, you know, and I will say this, I think that maybe this is how I've processed it. The mark of a good bartender isn't really having everything you need and following a recipe, making the right drink. I think, you know, most anybody could do that. I actually think that the mark of a good bartender is figuring things out with what you have. So I like to think of it as a good test. You know, every time a weird sub would come in that I'd have to figure out, it was a good test of my understanding of how to rebalance a drink now that a new element has been switched in.
So you didn't mistakenly get the wrong thing, but you had the wrong thing mistakenly forced upon you to work with.
Oh, constantly. Or he'd like make a deal with like a you know, a bro in the industry to like pick up their weird product, and I'd have to figure out a place to put it or sub it into a drink. It was, I mean, once again, just looking on the bright side, it was a good test of my skills, good education. And I will be honest, to this day, when I go to the liquor store, if I see something and I'm like, I don't know what that is, I've never heard of that, I have no idea how to work with that, a lot of times I'll buy it because it's a good challenge, like figuring out what something is similar to and then looking to see how that ingredient is used. And then the most basic use is to plug it into that. So you're like, in your instance, you have a gin liqueur, which I will say that is confusing. We always think of gin as one thing, but then there are these random gin liqueurs or sweet gins like Old Tom Gin that will be right there beside regular gin with no delineation, like you can't necessarily tell that it's different. So I think that is a very honest mistake to make. But you've got a gin liqueur that's providing sweetness, not just gin. You know, it's a fun little game to think, how do I balance this? Because I've got more sweetness than I need. So then I need less sweetness for my modifiers, you know.
Well, you could have ended up with Geneva. They might have had that sitting next to the gin.
Well, I mean, you know, usually Geneva is put with the gins. And then also like gin, Geneva, Aquavit, Old Tom gin, they'll all be in the same section. And they're all completely different things. So it's an honest mistake. And I think it's a great opportunity to just, sometimes you just try a spirit. And if you got a wide enough knowledge, you think, what does this taste like? You know, what in the spirit realm does this taste like that I can sub it in for?
Well, I think the worst I ever did is I didn't know, not being a mixed drinker myself for so long, just drinking beer, I didn't know that there was dry vermouth and sweet vermouth. I just thought vermouth was vermouth. So when Mom sent me to the store to get vermouth, was what my instructions were, I grabbed vermouth. Well, I got the wrong kind of vermouth. So the way we fixed it was, Mom wanted a drink bad enough, so she used it anyway.
Hey, I mean, what is the quote about necessity and invention that I'm thinking of?
Yeah, necessity is the mother of invention.
There you go. But I actually think that's true. And I mean, when we talk a lot about like cocktail history, you know, like we're talking about like how the margarita was devised, there's pretty firm evidence that it was just bartenders in Mexico who had all these Americans fleeing prohibition were south of the border and they wanted like a sidecar. And you had Mexican bartenders saying, okay, well, we don't have gin and we don't have lemon, but I have tequila instead and I have limes instead. Here you go. Like, new cocktail. So
that was a damn good invention.
It's better than the original, actually.
All right. The second part of Sierra's question. Do you know of any drinks that feature cardamom?
Not specifically, if you mean like classic cocktails. Now, cardamom does pop up as a spice, part of a spice profile for classic punches, you know, where you're like going back to like the history of punch, you know, it would be there alongside star anise, cinnamon, what am I thinking of, nutmeg. So if you want to like have a use for it in cocktail antiquity, I think you can look to that. But if it's just an ingredient that you like and you want to mix with it, the easiest route for that would really two directions you could do. It pops up in bitters. There are cardamom bitters out there pretty regularly available. I think Scrappy's has some, Bitterman's might, but you get some cardamom bitters if you just want to add the like nice dry spice note to a drink and see how that works out for you. Probably would also pair really well with that list of fall spirits that I read off earlier. I feel like cardamom and apple go great together. So cardamom and applejack or calvados or pomo would work great. You can also put it in a simple syrup. Very easy, you know. It can be a little bit overwhelming as an infusion. But the nice thing about a simple syrup is if you over-infuse it, you can just add more sugar and water to bring it down to the amount of infusion that you want. So don't worry about that. And I also feel like a lot of times when I want to use an ingredient, but I don't know exactly what to do with it, I go to the old, if it grows together, it goes together element and just look to see like what cuisines does it pop up in naturally. You know, you see a lot of cardamom in like Middle Eastern and Indian cuisine. I did a cocktail with a cardamom infused pistachio orgeat, basically a nut milk syrup with like rose water and Batavia or rack, but you can use like a white rum, you know, just like look at like how it's used culinary in a culinary sense and then pair it with ingredients that are also used alongside of it is also a fun thing to do to kind of pay homage to where it comes from and the history of it. So there you go. Like I don't know, no like name cocktails that I can think of that highlight it, but definitely an exciting and very usable element in cocktails.
First thing that struck me is putting it in mulled wine.
Oh, yeah. No, I've used it in mulled spice bases. Absolutely.
Okay. Oh. That was from a completely zero base of knowledge, but that's the only thing I could think of.
Well, with a lot of those spices, like you use them, you use several of them together because they're all really dominant. And I guess that's just one of the routes. You either use a bunch of them together to provide a spice profile that doesn't taste like one thing, or if you use them by themselves, you have to balance them out with really contrasting things. Like in the case of that, the pistachio cocktail I was saying, there was rose water in it too, and they kind of... they're both dominant, but they're opposites, so they fight. So I don't know. It's another one of those fun math things, right? Like, I want to work with this kind of dominant flavor. How can I make it sit down?
All right, and here's part three of Sierra's question. Hypothetical time. If you were going to open a bar, what would you name it, and what kind of drinks would you specialize in?
Well, that's a tough question in that I know it's changed over time. I've had different concepts as I've gotten older, but I feel like I've settled on I would definitely have to work with somebody that's smarter in marketing than me because I want to name it after my cat.
Jax.
Well, my cat's name is Jack Caddington. And so maybe like Caddington's Cocktails or Caddington's Apothecary. I think that's nice.
Caddington's Corner.
Yeah. Something. Or maybe just Jack Caddington's. I think that works. At my home bar, which I've been allowed to actually like sort of build out during all this time I've spent inside, I started collecting like Tuxedo Cat and like Black Cat memorabilia. There are a lot of liquor posters from like the like sort of Art Nouveau period that have like black cats like with like absinthe or amaro and stuff. There's a lot, so like I have a collection of those. So it's like I definitely want like a decor that is honoring like the Tuxedo Cat, like the black cat. And then for like what kind of cocktails? You know, I really do love the sort of even pretentious fanciness of a lot of the speakeasy style bars, you know, the bartenders with their fancy bow ties and vests and suspenders. I have nothing against that, but from doing the research that we've done for this podcast over the years, I've come to really desire what a Prohibition era bar would have actually been, because it wouldn't have been a fancy, high-end, tidy little situation, right? As we understand bars during Prohibition in America, you had, you know, you had the high-class people, but you also had women allowed to drink at a bar for the first time. You had the very vibrant but underground queer community sitting right next to them. And then you had like the Harlem Renaissance, these amazing black artists and writers right there. And they were very exciting and, you know, like artistic and like loud spaces, and they were illegal. So like, you know, it wasn't for when I go into a bar that is sort of a speakeasy style bar and it's so buttoned up and it's so proper and everything is so expensive and so high end. That's nice sometimes, but I would really love to have a bar that kind of captures that period of time, but sort of employs what it would have actually been like. Like, you know, you were mixing with bathtub gin back in the day. Now I wouldn't put that on the menu, but I'd love to have affordable cocktails because we're using well-made but affordable spirits because we know we're mixing them. You know, I think that there's a waste in putting a $50 bottle of tequila in a mixed drink when there's so much in like the $20 to $30 range, or even the $15 to $20 range that's excellent, but it's designed for mixing. It's not designed for sipping. So that's what I would love, like an affordable, like kind of luxurious party, like that vibe, that style, that decor of like the you know, 1930s feel, but like actually like you're actually in a bar that's run by rum runners and bootleggers, and you're here to dance and listen to music and have a good time and not break the bank.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. I used to think about owning a restaurant, and I always wanted to have it where it was built on like a, it looked like you were going on a railroad car And once you got up there, the whole thing kind of shook and rumbled the way a railroad car does when it's traveling. And you had the windows were actually like video screens where you would see passing scenery going by. So as you were eating, it was like eating on an old time railroad car or something.
Well, that's I mean, you could just have like a restaurant on a railroad car that actually like makes a little circle or something.
Well, that would be expensive.
More expensive than having TVs lined up to that sounds like some Disney magic that you're looking for.
There's a lot of federal railroad agency laws involved if you're actually running a train.
Just build your own track. It's fine. Well, that sounds cool. I do love I love a dining car. I remember when I would come home from college sometimes, I would take the train, and that's like a 14-hour train ride.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always fun to like get to actually sit in the dining car and just watch the mountains go by, like the New River Gorge or whatever that goes through.
Now what I think about doing is opening a gastropub that serves lots of draft beers and bourbon cocktails and has like wild food that you'd eat, and I would call it gastric distress.
Good concept. We can work on the name. there you go. Sierra, thank you for your bevy of very good questions.
All right. Here's one from Ben. It says, how does butt washing whiskey... Oh, wait a minute. I read that wrong. How does butter washing whiskey work? I've had it at one fancy bar, and it was the smoothest, roundest tasting whiskey I've ever had. Can other spirits be butter washed? And is it just butter that does this?
Well, basically, yes. So butter washing, or the broader term of what you're talking about is fat washing. I know that term doesn't sound great, but it does describe what we're talking about. It's a very basic process. So it's basically an infusion. You take your base spirit, and it can be any base spirit, and you do need to have something that has a significant amount of alcohol. Like, you wouldn't want to try to fat wash a very low alcohol liqueur. It just would take a long time and you wouldn't get a lot of breakdown. But any base beer, gin, vodka, tequila, rum, whiskey, whatever you want to infuse, you need to have your fat in a liquid suspension. So if we're talking about butter, you're going to melt it first, but you can also use sesame oil or olive oil. Bacon fat is a very popular fat washing liquid. So you put it in your booze, you let it sit for a couple days, and then, and that's infusion, just like anything you'd infuse, you know, and then you freeze it, and when it freezes, the fat molecules are going to solidify into like a little disc. You're going to scoop that disc out, you know, maybe give it a little fine strain, and what you're going to end up with is a infused spirit that will taste like the flavor molecules from that fat, because alcohol... Hmm. Can dissolve both fat-soluble and water-soluble flavor molecules. Now, the flavor is just part of it, though. The other part is the texture. Some people will tell you that freezing it will remove all the fat from your liquid. It won't. Some of it is still there. And that's why that roundness, that smoothness you're talking about, is literally there's some like remnants of fat in that bottle of whiskey. Now, not enough that you, I mean, I don't, you shouldn't worry about calories when you're drinking anyway. But like, if you're worried about it, it's not, you're not like drinking fat, but there is some of it that will add a texture to the spirit. So it'll taste very smooth, very silky. You've actually added some oil to it. It's a really cool process. It's, you know, pretty simple. It's not all that different from if you were infusing whiskey with whatever, rosemary or something. It's how you get it in and get it out.
I think I'll put some bacon in my bourbon.
Yeah, if you want a fat wash bourbon, you literally just render a bunch of bacon fat from bacon. You want the liquid, you don't want the whole bacon. That's a whole other thing. And you just put the bacon fat in your bottle, you know, shake it up and let it sit. Some people will tell you let it sit at room temperature. There are some concerns there for food safety that make me nervous. So I'd put it in the fridge for a couple days. And then, yeah, you just put it in the freezer upright. The fat will float to the top and freeze in a little disc. You just scoop that disc out and there you go.
Huh. Well, all right.
Yeah, there's a very well-known cocktail. I think it's permanent on the menu at PDT. Please don't tell. A very prominent cocktail bar here in New York called the Benton's Old Fashioned. It's an old fashioned with maple syrup and fat washed bourbon, and it is bacon fat washed bourbon, and it's amazing.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
There again, maple syrup and anything.
maple syrup and bacon fat. So, like, you know, not. Yeah. I couldn't have it, but I think you should.
All right. Our last question comes to us from Austin. This can probably be broken down into a few parts, but to get back on better terms with my liver, I've taken my home mixology sober. I'm working on a collection of shrubs and switzels, essences and oximals to keep things fresh. But what I really miss are some of those drier, more spirit-forward cocktails. Is there a good way to create that sort of drier flavor profile in a non-alcoholic cocktail?
Well, Austin, you're in luck because you're not alone in that curiosity, and that has led to a entirely new market of things to fill that void. If you want something you can just, you know, order off the internet, or depending on how well stocked your liquor store is, probably just fine. There are a lot of like bottled products that are alcohol-free base spirits. Like there's a brand called Monday that has a really good gin. There's a brand called Ritual that has a really good tequila. Now, are they one-to-one with what you're used to as somebody that has just tried these? Full disclosure, not exactly. They don't have that kind of drying, tactile element that alcohol has, but they do have those nice botanical flavors that will kind of fill the void. I also really like what Seedlip does. They're less trying to mimic specific spirits and more just having nice, dry, botanical and herbal and fruit, like oil infusions in a liquid that you can mix with. Three Spirits is another one that has like sort of that same idea where they're not necessarily trying to mimic one spirit, but they just have these really strong botanical infused zero alcohol liquids that you can mix with and sub in as you would a base spirit. Now, if you want things a little bit more interesting and you're a fan of like Amaros or, you know, like Fernet or whatever, there's a brand called Gia and there's a brand called Bitter Note that make really good alcohol-free Amaros. And also bitters. While a lot of bitters are based in very high octane alcohol, a lot of them are also made with glycerin. They're alcohol-free. So if you're interested in that, I would just, you know, you can Google alcohol-free or glycerin-based bitters, and there's a lot out there, a lot of really good brands. So those will dry out your drinks. They'll add some, you know, herbaceous notes or some bitter notes or some spice notes without adding any alcohol. And finally, if you want to DIY this stuff, a lot of the flavor notes we're talking about in, be it gin, or tequila, or you know, the drier flavors are things that you can sort of mimic with like teas. I think teas are great too because they bring tannins in, which is good and bitter. So you can experiment with a mix of like herbal and botanical and like bitter teas to base your cocktail in if you want a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, I like switzels and shrubs by in and of themselves, but I guess you could add some different herbal flavorings like that and kind of make it like a mixed drink.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the only thing that you're really going to, it's hard to replicate that very specific texture, I guess is the best way to describe it, of how alcohol interacts with your tongue. But everything else you're talking about are just flavor esters that can be harvested in other places. So, you know, if you've got switchels, you've got shrubs, maybe mix them with a good bitter tea, mix them with something like a, you know, a seed lip. Or Amass has one too. Amass makes really good gin and vodka, but they also have an alcohol-free kind of neutral spirit replica that they sell. And I think that's really cool that it's not just brands that are based around being alcohol-free. It's actual liquor producers making alcohol-free variants of their successful products. I think that's awesome.
All right. As long as it's not O'Doul's.
No, I mean, even in the realm of beer, there are some better alcohol-free alternatives that are out there. There's one brand that's like, it's got the word athletics or athletes. I should have looked it up ahead of time, but it's good beer. And I mean, same with wine. There's wine out there that's alcohol-free. So You're really
it's called
in,
grape juice.
Yes. No, you're really in like an ideal time to be looking for alternatives because it is a hot commodity right now.
All right. Well, we need that heat because the weather's changing cool.
It's soon to be a moderately temperature commodity, I guess.
Well, that wraps up all the questions. Hey, you did well answering them.
There you go. Thank you so much to all of our patrons for sending in your questions, taking the time to respond. And if you have any other questions, we're always collecting them and saving them for future episodes. If it's a question that requires enough of an answer, it'll get its own episode. So you are welcome to write to us at needtheboozecast@gmail.com. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me and for letting me learn along with everybody else all of your boozeology knowledge.
It's like I talked a lot. I mean, I just talked a lot. That was a lot. thank you for listening. If you want to find us on other forms of social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to share your own answers to any of these questions, give your own personal take on this, you can do that in our Facebook group.
That's right. Meet the Boozecast group page.
Meet the Boozecast group page, yes. hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Man, now I want to go out and drink something with fat and maple syrup in it.
I do love that last time. It's good.
Yeah, I could try that. We did that with popcorn. Remember that one drink we made that we had popcorn, let it dilute in it?
Yeah, no, that was that's a fat washing recipe that I got from the PDT book, actually, where I think you actually like brown butter and let it infuse with brown butter, and then you infuse it with popcorn. But yeah. for brevity, you can reduce those steps into one if you want to.
There you go. Have your popcorn and drink it, too.